Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
We are delighted that you can join us on Windows into Eternity. We hope you will enjoy equally well called The Mystical World We Live In, Discovering the Secrets of the Hidden Realms, Friday nights at 8 p.m., in which we speak about the secrets and revelations of these mystical realms. As I've walked between the worlds for multiple years, I have brought back the information that during these times we are able to share with you. So now we welcome back the one who assists me on these shows, and his name is Paul St. John, and he is my very dear friend and also the office manager of Spiritual Journeys in Newport, Oregon. Paul, welcome back, and we're delighted to have you with us, and just whatever you want to explore regarding these principles, I'm delighted to tackle.
Thank you, Almeen. I'm delighted to be here and asking you these questions. You mentioned in your introduction that you've been walking between the worlds for many years now, and I was wondering if you could actually talk a little bit about what that means. I know it has partly to do with your role as a Nagual, so if you could maybe explain what walking between the worlds means and how it relates to your path as a Nagual, as a Toltec Nagual.
Yes. Well, first of all, the Toltec traditions are very, very ancient. They speak of having come from the Mother of Creation herself. And that mother saw that the corruption of the masculine grids would occur, which would in turn corrupt the feminine grids. Now, each species has a grid that carries instructions on how to act. These grids have been lines of light in the past, along which light in the form of information flows. When these, as well as the ley lines, are disrupted, it affects trillions and trillions of beings. So Mother saw that this corruption would happen, and she created the Toltec way to rectify the grids, the pathways along which information flows, to form the ideal template of spiritual warriorship. Now, I had received this through the oral traditions handed down from Nagual to Nagual, and we will explain in a bit here what a Nagual is, but it was confirmed to me earlier in 2007 when I received for the second half of the book called The Gift of the Unicorns, The History of the Cycles, which came from the history keepers that Mother has designated as the ones to observe and watch the histories of the massive cycles of life that we call the cycles of the fall. And they did confirm that Mother produced this in order to turn opposition into stepping stones. And she did it specifically for the ages when she knew all would fall asleep. So the spiritual warrior always knew that the battle was won to dispel illusion and gain perception. So wielding his or her shield of impeccability, the warrior walked this path that embraced challenge as a source of power and perception. So obviously this changed in August of 2006, when the cosmic cycle of exploring the unknown changed to that of exploring the known. This changed the very fabric of the Toltec's existence, and it put to the test the essence of spiritual warriorship, which is fluidity, the ability to spin on a dime at a moment's notice and change direction if that is required. So, did you want me to go into what a Nagual is, or?
Well, you know, Almeen, we have, I think on one of the very, I think possibly the very first show of this series, Windows into Eternity, I know you did go quite in depth into the explanation of what a Nogwal is, but I was thinking you could maybe give a little bit of information for those who haven't heard that show, because I'd like to delve deeper into what the prongs mean for
a Nogwal. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, well, let's do that then. So, man is unique within the cosmos. We need to understand that for starters, in that they mirror the macrocosm, giving him extraordinary potential for power and growth. But within humanity, there is a being with a rare and particular configuration of fields around his or her body that mirrors the macrocosm even more closely, and that's the Nogwal. So the seven bodies of man, which is the etheric, emotional, mental, and so on, and, you know, we give images of how those look in the Ring of Truth and Journey to the Heart of God and virtually every book, because we have, you know, many things pertain to the bodies of man. But they're stacked inside one another, forming a luminous cocoon, which represents the cosmos in the microcosm. So the Nogwal, on the other hand, has a double luminous cocoon that represents not only the cosmos, but also the infinite that created it. And this enables him or her to hold a lot more energy, and with more energy comes more consciousness. So the Nogwal has been dedicated to leading others to freedom from illusion, an ancient and noble dedication kept alive throughout millions of years of history. But in one fell swoop, during the last week of July 2006, the Nogwal's purpose for existence was rewritten. As the exploration of illusion or the unknown gave way to the study of the known, the Nogwal's life became dedicated to embodying and mirroring that which most closely resembles the divine, that which is, and that which reflects the infinite's being. So that, in a nutshell, then, is what the Nogwal is. Was and is.
Thank you. So how does, now the luminous cocoon, I understand at some point, splits for a Nogwal. Could you explain
yes,
those splits?
Yes, it does.
Because the reason I'm asking is I've heard you speak before about how different Nogwals have different responsibilities, some of them, and which are generally indicated by the number of splits they have in their luminous cocoon. And recently someone has written to us to say they were told that they were a 12-pronged Nogwal. So I'd like a little bit further explanation about that.
Yes. Traditionally, there have been 3- and 4-pronged Nogwals. What I didn't know is that when one leaves the human kingdom, and other Nogwals didn't know, because it is only as of August of 2005, that not only did Nogwals aspire to make the leap to freedom from death, which meant that they actually graduated into what we call the Ascended Mastery Realms. But they aspire to go across from humanity into what we call the God Kingdom. And the first one that managed was in August of 2005. Up until that point, only 9 of our beings on Earth had graduated from the Ascended Mastery Realms into the God Kingdom, and I frequently have mentioned that. Let's first, if I may, if I could first tackle, but don't let me forget to tell you how this happens, but let's look at the 3- and 4-pronged Nogwals that are found within the levels of evolution within humanity. It's only after you leave the human condition that it will split and split again until you end up as a 12-pronged Nogwal. So, unlike other light promoters, the Nogwal undergoes specific mental and emotional testings that will crack the luminous cocoon, enabling more energy to be accessed and creating protrusions, or they're like prongs, around the edge of the cocoon. Where three cracks branch out from one another, three prongs appear. Where two cracks form a crisscross, four prongs will appear. And this creates what is called three- and four-pronged narwhals. So, you know, in 2005, January, I split my luminous cocoon, or my luminous egg, as some people call it, into a three prongs, three cracks. I became a three-pronged narwhal. Then, at the end of July, I split it again into another four prongs, became a seven-pronged narwhal. You know, but I had already moved into very advanced stages. It's not normal for that to happen. So three-pronged narwhals function much the same way within the cosmos as a fully activated pineal gland does within man, accessing the unknowable through insight. They don't always know where the information comes from, only that it's there and flows where intent directs. The three-pronged narwhal can be of either sex, but it's very, very much hermaphroditic in that the male and female components within are very evenly balanced. The focus or strong suit of this type of narwhal is the raising of the kundalini by the passionate inner love affair between his or her own masculine and feminine pieces. In other words, the love affair is within. The four-pronged narwhals work together in pairs as a four-pronged narwhal man and a four-pronged narwhal woman. Each express the masculine and feminine aspects respectively, functioning much the same as a left and a right brain would. The four-pronged woman gets her symbols and feelings as non-cognitive feelings or information. Her partner interprets them cognitively, assessing where the gaps in the information are, and then redirecting questions back to her so that she may gather the missing non-cognitive information. And so these two types of narwhals, the four-pronged narwhals, crack their luminous eggs in different ways. The narwhal man cracks his luminous eggs by experiencing emotional turmoil so intense that it creates cracks in his fields. And the fields, you know, these eggs do not crack all the way through, because that's really what is death. But the anguish he feels causes the emotional fields around the body to spin differently, and the cocoon cracks. The narwhal woman suddenly finds herself in mental torture, unlike anything previously experienced. Having silenced her mind completely at this point, she now finds she has a mental obsession. In the grip of what she knows to be a form of complete insanity, she nevertheless cannot escape the obsessive and increasing thoughts until finally her mental fields start to spin in an opposite direction and her cocoon splits. So the three-pronged narwhal, who expresses both masculine and feminine aspects, experiences both. After years of training that silenced all internal dialogue and established emotional sovereignty, the narwhal may become obsessively needy. This causes increasing emotional and mental anguish, and the cocoon cracks. You know, it's similar to what's described as what Christ experienced in the Garden of Gethsemane. And this event is recognized by narwhals because that's about what they go through.
Wow. And what happens to create those further? Is it a similar experience which causes the division into more prongs once someone has entered into other kingdoms?
The anguish through which it's produced is still there, but I never found it that intense again after that.
Mm.
See, you know, for people that are familiar with the Merkaba, you know, the three star tetrahedrons that are three-dimensional stars of David, for instance, that all occupy the same space around the body, just like in Leonardo da Vinci's drawing. The physical one is stationary. the other two spin in opposite directions. The emotional one spins to the right, and it used to spin 21 times for every 34 times. The mental one spins clockwise, counterclockwise. But this was changed by Mother in 2007 when she made them spin at the same time, the same speed, because no longer did growth come through opposition, but through mutual support. But, you know, around these, there are three octagons, and again, one is stationary, the other two spin in opposite directions, all in the same space, and so on. But when Nagwas crack their cocoons during the human experience, it will happen only once, lighting up the Nagwas fields like a lamp. And in the case of the Nagual man, the emotional trauma causes the right spinning, emotional star tetrahedron to start spinning left, like the mental one. And the emotions totally override perception, and because they spin at different speeds, which they do, even though Mother corrected that, because, you know, it's not supposed to be spinning left, the cocoon will crack. For the Nagua woman, mental obsessions pull the left-spinning mental star tetrahedron right. And as the mental and emotional star tetrahedrons now spin clockwise at different speeds, her luminous cocoon cracks. And in the case of the three-pronged Nagua, the mental and the emotional anguish each pull in two opposite directions, the fields with equal force, and the tops of all three star tetrahedrons are pulled counterclockwise and the bottoms clockwise, ripping them apart and cracking the cocoon. And normally the field of light emitted by a person's spinning fields is in the shape of a UFO. It's like a saucer shaped. When the tops and bottoms spin independently, like with the three-pronged Nagual, when they're cracking, it resembles a large ball of light. So the goal for Nagwas, as for all human beings, is to graduate beyond humanness to the human kingdom, where a whole new evolutionary experience awaits. And here the Nagwas cocoon splits again. And, you know, if they were three-pronged, they'll split it again into four. And then eventually they split it one more time into another five times. And then they end up as a 12-pronged Nagual. Let's take a quick break for commercials.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Key series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back. You have joined us in discussing concepts of ascension. Paul, thank you for your questions as always, and please continue.
Okay, I mean, well, you were discussing some very profound changes in the luminous cocoon for individuals who have become or who are Nagwals. And I was just curious if these changes are what allows someone to walk between the worlds the way you do, or if there's other ways that you're able to know what you know.
Okay. Okay, well, let me tackle the part of your question that I do understand.
Okay.
Then you can explain to me which part I didn't tackle, then in case I get it all, you see. There is technique involved, but it's more than technique. Because, for example, how you are able to move between realities and go from one level to the next is by changing the position of the assemblage point and having the ability to maintain that shift. Now, the assemblage point is about a tennis ball size of light. Earlier in our show, we discussed the luminous cocoon around the physical body of man, and that about an arm's length behind the heart, there, on the edge of that cocoon, there is a ball of light that determines which reality we are accessing. It's the slightly different positions of the ball of light that in some ways account for different ways in which people look at the world. But when you can shift it, and in a large enough shift, you can actually shift it out of this reality and into the next. You have to have the know-how to be able to maintain that shift. But what gives you the ability to maintain that shift is the total silencing of the mind. I remember having a group of students, quite a large group, with me at my house in Oregon, where we have gatherings a few times a year. It's on our website. And they were here and they said, look, Almin, we want to be able to have you shift us into other realms. And I said, they said, you know, other Nagwals do this. We've read Carlos Castaneda's books. You know, Don Juan would shift him into other worlds. And they said, why don't you do that for us? I said, because you won't remember. Oh, no, we'll remember. We'll make a point of it. Okay, so I said, look, why don't you do this? I'm going to shift you into another realm, but I'd just like you to keep time for me. Why doesn't everybody that has a watch on look at that watch? Okay, and they're sitting there watching me. I'm standing in front of them. And finally, one of them said, well, aren't you going to do something? We're still here. I said, look down at your watches again. And 45 minutes had passed. So I shifted them into other realities. We often are in other realities, for instance, in the dream time, to have the enough energy to remember being in those other realms, because a lot of it is non-cognitive. All initial energy gets sucked up by the dialogue in our head, by left brain trying to justify its existence as the supposed ruler of our life. So only excess energy goes to the right brain, which is what would be accessing this experience. And if we are in the dialogue of the mind, we do not have enough energy to access what we have experienced, that is right brain-oriented experiences. So they did indeed go with me into other realms, but they had no ability to be able to remember it because they had, at that point, still got a dialogue in their mind. Those of them that stayed with me, of course, don't now, but they did then. And as you know, Paul, the masters that gather in our classes, you know, they are, well, let's look at what we experienced here in October. In October, we had one of the sisters, one of the masters in the class, able to talk to herself eons ago, mm-hmm. where we arrived at the same spot on the same timeline that we were at eons ago, and she was able, through a crack between those timelines, to talk to her other self and have herself give us instructions as to how to avoid mistakes we had made then that we couldn't see the consequences of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have had our sister from Curacao encounter herself in the halls of Sanat Kumara, which was open to us in October to go to. We've had all these experiences because they have silenced the dialogue in their minds, which generally happens after 1 week in my classes because of the incredible gifts that we are given for what we are required to do. And also because they're in the midst of masters that already have done that. But only then do you even know that you've experienced these things. So that's one of the ways. That's a crucial part of it, is the silence of the dialogue so that you can shift your assemblage point into other levels of life. That's number one. Secondly, as you move into higher and higher levels, if you move into the final apex of human development, which is what we describe very carefully, and we explain the transfigurations that occur and so on in Secrets of the Hidden Realms, but if you move there, you know, and you know, you don't succumb to the temptation that you face there, which is what most ascended masters have done in the past, which was to over-gravitate into the light. And when you over-gravitate into anything and you don't pulse between your polarities of doingness and beingness, most of them just went into beingness. You fritter away lifetimes of energy gathered that you need in order to be able to work with the power that you have then. But if you don't succumb to this temptation of over-gravitating towards the beingness principle, the feminine principle, you have enough power at that time to have information come through you directly from source entirely without any thinking. I have written my books without thinking from the second one forward with no thought other than when I do the editing, my hand simply writes it and my mind is totally expanded and still. The hand writes the book. That's the way that I do most of my speaking. The only times would be the exception of when it's deductive or analytical, and even some of the analytical will come through effortlessly. I have learned, as you have, Paul, to modulate my voice as though I'm thinking, because otherwise it tends to sound very robotic. You do the little bit of pauses, you speak like other people, but the speaking is not preceded by conscious thought. So the knowledge comes very effortlessly. A great deal of my knowledge comes from simply the full awareness that I can bring to every moment of every sign in my environment, because that's where all true knowledge is gained, and the language of those signs we have in the Ring of Truth, we have in Secrets of the Hidden Realms, so people can analyze what's happening in their environment. And I believe you and I discussed this last week.
Yes, we did discuss it in one show. I'm not sure if it was last week. But, and that I understand is a very important part of how a Toltec and how everyone really should function in their daily life.
And, you know, when you do this, there is no personal life. Mm. Because you know for a fact, if somebody just slaps you in your face, there's a big wake-up call that you have to get. They've delivered it, thank you very much, but it's not a personal thing.
Mm.
So everything in your environment becomes a great gift of insight. What you miss is given to you in your dream time. So that's why my dreams and my everyday work is very major for obtaining new information each day.
Wow.
But, you know, that's why whatever you ask is just fine with me. If there's something I don't know that isn't coming through my mouth right away, it's because there's a principle behind it that I need to ask about first before I can understand the answer. And in those cases, I will ask Mother directly, because as of 2005 in February, she has called me to do the work that I need to do with those that are feel in their heart they need to be part of it. And, you know, know, I speak with her on a day-by-day basis. Hence, I speak her languages.
Wow. Almin, you mentioned that a lot of this this perception that that we're expanding to has to requires energy to achieve. I was wondering, and you also said explained how it's the left brain, the dialogue of the left brain, which generally takes up a lot of energy, and so a huge part of gaining energy is to silence that dialogue. I'm wondering if you can talk about any further ways to generate energy, as you know, as you've explained how increased energy equals increased consciousness.
A great gift has been given to all beings, and it has only occurred in December of 2007. And that gift is that their hearts has become a free energy device. So the free energy device is activated by love and praise and gratitude as the beautiful, beautiful ascension attitudes that are given and fully discussed in Journey to the Heart of God. So we can generate more energy for ourselves by generating more love, praise, and gratitude. Now, interestingly enough, love, praise, and gratitude not only generates energy, but it generates awareness directly. Let's say that energy is the currency with which you purchase awareness. Awareness is that which you purchase. It's like you get two for the price of one. You buy one, you get one free. It pulls awareness towards one, and it gives you the currency with which to purchase awareness, which is energy.
Wow. That's very useful. That's the kind of stock market tip that I like to receive. Thank you, Almin.
You know, and I know people have been very worried about financial situations everywhere, but mothers changing that in energy issue in the cosmos is a huge part of it. Because when that changes and we become our own free energy device, things like the oil crisis and things like that on Earth has to change as well.
Hmm. The microcosm has to reflect the macrocosm.
Yes, it does.
Wow.
Let's just take a few minutes, quick break, and please join us after this, and we'll be right back.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life and provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Al Mean experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth that can be recognized for what it is, and is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almeen's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We are back, and we have with us Paul St. John. Paul, thank you, and please continue with the questions you were asking.
Okay, I'd like to actually delve a little bit further into the Toltec way. Hopefully you can. I know that it's changed significantly since the ascension in 2006. You've referred to that as the shift in polarities in August 2006. So I would like you to speak a little bit about the changes in the Toltec way and actually what the actual word Toltec refers to.
Okay. The Toltec always has been a warrior against illusion, which, you know, of course, no longer exists. It's just what we choose to cling to, but the reality doesn't resist. The word Toltec comes from the Lemurian word ta-altaka, meaning practitioner of inclusiveness. So in addition to the duty that they have of assisting others remove illusion and obtain freedom, the Toltec Nahuals practiced inclusiveness. So, you know, they feel very much at home in the new creation as of August, where inclusiveness is now the only way that will flourish.
Yeah, could you speak a little bit more about inclusiveness? I think that's a very important principle for people to understand.
Yes, and I don't think we often take the time to define these terms. It's important to define them. I'm glad you're doing this. So what is inclusiveness? Inclusiveness acts from one's highest identity, Paul. Every interaction and decision originates from this vantage point. Secondly, it considers the effects on all life that every action will have. It helps us know that we are each the center of our cosmos, exerting the most profound influence on all life with our smallest and every action. And inclusiveness knows that to benefit the whole is to benefit ourselves. It acknowledges the oneness of life. And it changes the external mirrors by changing ourself within. We call this portion of inclusiveness autonomy, and we've several times touched on it, you and I have, mm-hmm. on previous shows, I believe.
Yes.
So, you know, now that all externally reflects what Mother is, any lingering illusions in our lives must come from within or from others who insist on clinging to these obsolete patterns, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer it?
Yes, it does. So how have these things, I know that Toltec has always practiced inclusiveness, and I guess you indicated that they're just now more at home in this new paradigm in which inclusiveness is what is supported and will flourish in this at this point in time. Can you talk about some of the changes to the Toltec way since 2006? Or I guess since the beginning of the ascension?
Well, you know, only about 10% of the previous teachings are still applicable. Because there's no more unknown, as we use the term, to apply to illusion. The unknown now concerns new and unways to apply the known. So the threats associated with the illusion we faced before have disappeared. So the warriorship is now a lot more internal warriorship. So very basic concepts, such as, you know, they had premises for problem solving. They had what's called the warrior shield, the warrior's code. I mean, all these things changed. Which of these things did you have in mind that I should be talking about? Or,
well, the warrior's shield sounds really interesting.
Okay. okay.
You wouldn't mind talking about that a little bit?
No, not at all. You know, and just this issue, before I tackle this, you said the warrior shield, right? I'm happy to do that.
Right.
But just before I go there, we mentioned this issue of internal warriorship versus external.
Yes.
And previously, we had to pierce illusion to find its insight. Now, with illusion solved, the warrior ignores illusion, since it no longer belongs to the infinite. It's just held onto by individuals. In other words, a Toltec warrior doesn't spend time on trying to heal disease. They spend time on seeing what is this game trying to teach me? Because they know now that disease is an illusion because its real part has been removed. They do not, in as part of the illusion-based reality of the old, they do not take time to look at television war games and what is happening in the Middle East in terms of the war and so on, because they know that it is a group of beings clinging to illusion, and they do not find that entertaining, nor do they give it the energy of their focus. So they find instead that which is true and beautiful and reflects the infinite in each moment. So, you know, let's look at this that you've asked about the warrior shield. Previously, the warrior shield that the Toltecs lived by decreed that they move forward in life with the utmost caution and awareness, and with the humility to acknowledge that we cannot know anything for certain, and the assurance that whatever choice is before us, we will choose from our highest choice, which is what impeccability is. So, you know, the protectiveness that was part of the previous warrior shield, the awareness that we're being stalked by death, we're being stalked by this, that, or the other, that is gone. Because as an emotion, protectiveness is obsolete. The first part of the warrior shield has to do with safeguarding his well-being. But he or she must remind himself that appearances are not what they seem. And they move forward with the utmost awareness that they don't get trapped into seeing appearances as real. So the warrior must be alert to the guidance of his bodily responses to that which he encounters, because his well-being is guarded for him by the new cosmic laws that cause opposite energies to repel. He just has to pay attention. Is he nauseated in someone's presence? Do his muscles tense, his throat tighten? You know, he needs to remove himself from any situation that constricts his life. He is always to act from the most authentic of the 12 pure emotions. And in the previous cycle, perception was the primary guidance. But now, these new emotions are. More than ever, he has to live a path with heart. So that's about it on the warrior shield in terms of what has changed.
Wow, those are profound changes, Almeen. Thank you for sharing those with us. Can you talk a little bit about how, even for a Toltec or a Nagual traveling this path, there's certainly going to be, challenges which arise. So maybe you could give us some guidance on certain guidelines to solving problems that arise in daily life or
okay.
in general.
Yes, because problems before contained our insight. And problems now have a slightly different connotation. So previously, we reminded ourselves that we had no choice but to attempt to turn the unknown into the known by attempting to solve the problem. It was the purpose of our creation. And of course, now the new purpose is not to solve the illusion that no longer exists, but instead to most fully reflect that which the infinite is. So we then also previously acknowledged that what we're attempting to solve might be more than we could solve within our lifetimes. We did this so so as not to become invested in outcome. In other words, we previously acknowledged that we had contract with the infinite to solve certain portions of the illusion, and it could take us lifetimes. We then previously reminded ourselves that nothing was as it seemed and could not be taken at face value. We admitted that what we were in fact dealing with was the unsolved portions of the infinite's being. We reminded ourselves that we deliberately co-created the situation before us in order to gain our next insight and fulfill the next part of our destiny. We also acknowledged that the solution had to benefit all involved. So rather than using mind to identify the source of a problem and to explore ways to resolve it, we now ask our hearts for a solution that would apply at least one of the pairs of emotions. And again, these pairs of emotions are on the Bell Vaspata website. And Paul, just quickly fire away and give them that.
www.belvaspata.com.
We remind ourselves we can create what we love. There's no set plan anymore. We don't have a contract that we have to fulfill because there's a portion of the illusion we have to solve. So there's no set course for us. We have to create what we love. So here's how we solve a, quote, problem. We remember that we are reflecting the true nature of the infinite being, which is the true mother, that all decisions need to reflect the perfect compassion of her being. We carefully note the responses of our emotions and body to portions of the problem before us. They tell us which portions and people have opposite energies. Accept as valid the desire to repel portions of what is being presented. This is the new way of compassion, because now opposite energies and matter are repelling. We go our own way. We live joyously, and the light and the love this generates will automatically be gravitating to the most loveless and lightless places. There is no lightless place, but there are places where light is distorted in creation. So, you know, accept as valid that you want to be repelling certain portions of what is in front of you. And then lastly, we remind ourselves that the highest service we can render to all life is to live in a way that makes our hearts sing and evokes genuine emotions. We further remind ourselves that this is the new form of compassion, that to hold on to that which is being repelled from within or is repelling us from without serves no one. Sometimes those of opposite energy may recognize the need to repel us even before we do. Let's take a few quick moments here for commercials.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspata, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Almeen continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence.
Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to our final segment of Windows into Eternity, Understanding Concepts of Ascension. We hope, too, that you will join us for our other show, which airs Friday nights at 8 p.m. Pacific Time, called The Mystical World We Live In, Discovering the Secrets of the Hidden Realms. Our workshops that are given throughout the year, you will find on our website, which is www.spiritualjourneys.com. We are in Ireland, Alaska, Canada, and the U.S. during 2008. And if that changes, there's a possibility of some other venues in foreign countries. We will place it on our website, and we will let you know. So, Paul, we have about 5 minutes left. What is it you would like us to do?
Well, Almeen, in your book, The Ring of Truth, you give some definitions for some very profound concepts, and I was wondering if we could summarize some of those for the listeners.
Which ones are they?
Well, particularly, there's concepts like what is truth, and what is perception, and fluidity, what is intent, those types of definitions. Maybe you could start with what truth is.
Okay, well, a lot of linear guidelines of conduct, such as justice, no longer exist. We no longer have to seek these truths. Truth is instead what we masterfully create moment by moment through the heart. We are standing, this great gift of Mother, before a blank canvas, paintbrush in hand, and there are no paint-by-number guidelines called truth. So truth is instead what we will make of it, moment by glorious moment. We can seek clarity in that we seek to understand the laws governing existence. But even the truth, which is the laws of creation, are expounded upon, expand, and change day by day as the Mother gains insights from the experiences of our lives. In the last week, the nature of light has changed. The nature of sound has changed. These laws ongoingly change. And we endeavor to keep our listening audience caught up with it, not only by these radio shows, but also by the question and answers that we send out ever so often through our email list, and we try and answer direct questions as well. So that is what truth is. And you mentioned perception.
Yes, something we've already talked a little bit about this show, but if you could maybe summarize it for us, that would be helpful.
Perception, I believe we defined it when we, in the Ring of Truth, as, you know, that we notice our innocence and beauty in outside mirrors. In other words, we're noticing that portion of the Mother that we are, and the Father, her first creation, in the outside mirrors. feeling with non-cognitive perception the specific nuance or flavor the mirror brings to the familiar portions of ourselves and allows us to expand to include it. And this makes what we are deeper and richer. Let's now explain it the following way. Because something quite unique happened in December of 2007, in that our pineal gland turned in a way in which it is now looking inward versus upward. Our pituitary gland is looking inward versus outward. Those changes happened when the cosmos moved into what we call the inner space of the infinite being rather than the outer space. Now, the result of this is that we find within us that which is praiseworthy, beautiful, innocent in expression, our highest truth, our highest aspirations. And as we find these pieces within and live it without, the light fibers that we describe in Journey to the Heart of God, in Secrets of the Hidden Realms, in Ring of Truth, in multiple of the books where we show the seventh body of man as trillions of light fibers radiating outwards through all six other bodies, including the physical, from our life force center, which used to be behind the belly button, but has been moved up to the heart as of the end of 2006. So when those light fibers come online, so to speak, in that they are lived by us in our environment, as we become aware of these inner senses or inner ripples through our being, they are brought online by living them. When that happens, we align with the same light fibers of the infinite, because we are living that which Mother is. Then our experiences downloads to her information, and in return we become more of what we are. Let's say we are living purity. When we live this principle out in our outer life, it then aligns our light fibers with hers. It shows her new ways in which that principle can be lived out, and it makes it so much larger within ourselves, and perception has taken place. Paul, we are out of time. Thank you, as always. It's been a delight. Thank you, too, to our listening audience. We'll be with you again next week.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Al Mee. Please join us again next week.